Welcome to Wonders, the One Hit Wonder podcast. I'm your host, Ian Zandi, comedian out of LA. We are on a bit of hiatus, but welcome to the bonus episode. The first, the only, maybe not. I don't know. What's life anymore? Nobody knows. But I do know that this is a very special episode. I wanted to bring it in between seasons, the purgatory of podcasts, if you will. But yes, this is Wonders, the One Hit Wonder podcast. Each episode, we have a special guest, usually a friend of mine, usually a comedian, sometimes a musician. Today, what? We have both. Not two different people, just one. I heard an audible gasp, and that was not that was not a ghost. That was my guest. And there are no rules on this podcast, you know, whatever we consider to be a one-hit wonder. Yeah, that's a one-hit wonder to me. But this is probably the most popular one-hit wonder of all time. Quite possibly. Quite fitting for a bonus episode. And this special guest of mine. They're a musician. They're a comedian. They're an educator. They're also known as a recording artist, Drunken Logic. Please welcome Jake Kassman.
What is up, man? Thank you for having me.
It's, yeah, thank you for being on.
A pleasure to hear your voice. First time, long time. That is a really interesting way to frame this, is whether or not this even qualifies as a one-hit wonder. One of the things I noticed, we haven't even revealed what song we're talking about yet, right?
No, but, not yet.
But one of the things I did when I was researching this is that, yeah, the United States is, I think, the only country in the world that would consider this song a one-hit wonder.
Oh, really? So they're more popular elsewhere, which makes sense, considering
they're from elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. undescribed elsewhere.
There is the United States, and then there is elsewhere, and they are from the elsewhere.
And that's the most American thing we could say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about you first. We know each other, for the listener, from doing Second City stuff. I'm usually behind the tech booth. You're usually behind the keys a lot of time, although you're on stage sometimes too.
Every once in a while, yeah.
Yeah. Have you been doing stuff with them over quarantine still?
I have had more work with them during quarantine than I ever had through just Los Angeles.
And, oh, wow.
So I'm kind of grateful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish we could be back in our podunk little theater, though. It would be nice.
Up all the stairs.
Up all the stairs, yeah.
No, I think we'll be back there in hopefully a matter of months.
Oh, I hope, man.
Information at all. Yeah. But we'll see. You're doing like the keys for their online shows then?
Yeah, it turns into a little bit of virtual stage managing as well. But yeah, I've been doing a lot of student shows, a lot of the other thing is that there's just been, because Zoom is so boring, a lot of I shouldn't say Zoom is boring. Zoom life is so boring. A lot of major companies are kind of hiring Second City to come in and do their workshops or do some like socials to spice things up.
Yes.
So we've had a lot of work through that.
Yeah.
It's been nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. And then I brought you on specifically because you're releasing a new album, your first album, or a new EP.
Yes. So Drunken Logic is a band / solo project. It has been both at different times. I'd like to tell people that I was the last person in the band to realize that it was actually my solo project. That's a whole other thing. But we actually released three full-length albums previously.
Nice.
Yeah, and so we're putting out a new EP called It's Only Temporary on March 12th. And the new single is called Lost in February, and that dropped on February 26th. So you can go listen to that everywhere now.
Very nice. I will drop that in the show notes. Where can people find your music?
DrunkenLogicMusic.com. We are at Drunken Logics on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch, where I'm now live streaming twice a week. And all of your various streaming services as well. You can listen to us. Yeah, and it's cool. It's actually apropos because this EP kind of came about. I was actually about to turn the last Drunken Logic album into a stage musical for Hollywood Fringe when the world shut down.
Oh, wow. That was like right before Fringe.
Though. Yeah. 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 And we had our first table read, actually, the night that the NBA suspended play. I distinctly remember that. In the middle of that, I kind of had this realization. I had these four songs that were much more kind of electronically arranged and influenced. And what better time to experiment with that kind of music than when you couldn't actually get a band together in the studio.
Yeah.
So I worked with an old friend of mine who produces music under the name Iron Fist. And we scrapped four songs together, and it sounds like a very different style of music than the kind of indie folk rock that Drunken Logic is a little bit known for. But it has a lot of, because I've seen you talking about this gentleman on social media, it's got a lot of Phil Collins influence in it, actually.
Yes, I am obsessed with him lately.
Yeah, I spent all of, I think, two summers ago listening to everything Genesis, Peter Gabriel, and Phil Collins. It was my project to take all three of those connected, intertwined artists on.
Yes.
And so I spent a lot of time trying to really sing like him, because I think he's one of the great underrated rock vocalists.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And then there's a song, the last song on this EP has some very Phil Collins drums in them.
Nice. So,
yeah, yeah. And then a lot of bass 80s synths, which we're going to talk about as well today.
Oh, yes. That's actually a wonderful transition. I usually let the guest pick whatever song they want. You wanted to pick Take On Me by Aha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this song.
Oh, it's a fantastic song. I can't think of a reason why someone would possibly not know this song.
It is pretty universal, I think. It is pretty universally known. If you don't know it sonically, you know the music video.
Oh, absolutely.
The music video is better than the song, if you ask me, and is maybe one of the like top 10 most iconic pieces of media from the 1980s, if you ask me.
Oh, absolutely. Just overall, in general, not even music videos, just like any kind of media.
If you want an 80s look, like this everything about this video just screams 1980s.
Everything. Yes, the way it's filmed, everything aside from, well, we'll get into like the rotoscoping and everything later,
right.
But like the way it's filmed feels very Phil Collins. Feels very 80s.
Oh, everything about it is just so delightfully Yes.
Before we talk about it, I'll just talk a little bit about the background from the Wikipedia, since of course we can't hear it. I could hum it, I guess, da-da-da-da-da-da, but no, we don't want that. But the Wikipedia says, Take On Me is a song by Norwegian synth pop band Aha. The original version was produced by Tony Mansfield and remixed by John Ratcliffe. The 1985 version was produced by Alan Tarney for the group's debut album, Hunting High and Low, 1985. The song combines synth pop with a varied instrumentation, including acoustic guitars, keyboards, and drums. The original Take On Me was recorded in 1984 and took two versions and three releases to chart in the UK, and it reached number two in the UK singles chart in October 1985, and then the US also in 1985 October. I don't know why they said that twice. Became the only Aha song to top the Billboard Hot 100.
Which is the point, is that in the US, this song was huge the third time they put it out.
Yeah.
which I think is hilarious in and of itself. But none of their other songs ever made it huge. But like if you look through some of the European they were a big band in Europe, and definitely had some impact. They were well known.
Do you know, were they big before they released this song or just after?
I don't believe they were big. This was their debut album.
Oh yeah, that's true. I just said that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Though as we'll decide, will determine. I did a lot of reading up on the song ahead of time, and Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of myself though.
Oh, that's so okay.
Well, I'll let you steer this unwieldy
steer
ship.
Steer the boat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I let the guests pick whatever one hit wonder they want. Why did you pick this song? Do you have a connection to it? Anything like that?
I have two moments in my life really stand out when discussing this song. The first is that the first vocal lessons I took were at my first college, and I had always kind of rock music is my thing, and so the whole idea of taking vocal lessons was a little bit anathema to me.
Mm-hmm.
Until I found out that I could do it for college credit, and so that changed the calculus quickly. Literally, I actually took my first music theory class at Penn because I could take it instead of calculus. That was the reason why.
I think that's why I took it at community college too. I'm like, oh, this counts. Sure, I'll
this
take
counts
this.
As math. Hell yeah. So, anyways, I was taking this lesson. This is a very classically trained. I think it was an opera baritone. Guy named Brian, really great guy. And he was teaching me about how you can learn to modulate your voice as you're transitioning between your head voice and your chest voice or vice versa. And just kind of how you can change vowel sounds and certain things to try and, as he put it, sound like the same person no matter what range of your voice you're singing in.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally turned to him and I said, oh, so not like the guy who sings Take On Me.
And what did he say?
And he was immediately like, exactly. Yeah. I kid you not. I think the first time I listened to this song, I thought four people were singing the chorus. Because the guy spans like 2.5 octaves over the course of it. It's crazy.
That's a crazy man. I don't know what's normal per se. I'm not a singer by any means. I do it anyway, but I'm not a good singer. But 3 octaves seems insane.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally insane. And that falsetto, I mean, he's basically singing in the bass range to start.
Mm-hmm.
Low baritones can hit that. But by the end, he's gone up, 2.5 octaves to some falsetto territory that no man I know of can hit in chest voice.
Yeah.
But he's of course hitting it in falsetto, but it's iconic falsetto. And he's hitting it with power, which is another very hard thing to do. And I know that because I don't know if you know this about me, Ian, but I worked full time as a dueling piano player for about 3 years when I lived back east. And I still do it fairly frequently when normal life is a thing. But, and I've played all over the country. I've played in, depending on the room you're playing to and the kind of show that people expect, the music can vary wildly in terms of what's requested. If for those, I don't want to be pedantic or condescending to your listeners, but for those of you who don't know, a dueling piano show is when there's two pianos on stage, the piano players trade off singing songs, and the entire show is request driven. So they are handing up slips of paper with song requests on them, and they are tipping us based on how badly they want to hear the song. That's how the entire mini capitalist economy works.
Yes.
And no matter what room I have ever played in, this song absolutely slayed. It's and I've played in rooms that like. There was a bar here in Los Angeles that shut down right before the pandemic hit that really did not gravitate to songs older than about 15 years,
mm-hmm.
which was a real struggle because that's not what a dueling piano bar is made for.
It's made not. For Elton John.
Yeah. And you're Billy Joel and your American Songbook. And I mean, you are kind of the joy of that gig is having to do everything on the piano. I would always live for when somebody would request Chop Suey by System of a Down. That was like one of my favorite things to do, or like Fat Lit by Sum 41. Like that's the stuff I would live for.
Because
you're just mashing notes at that point. It's not even it's more percussion than it is harmony.
Yeah.
But yeah, no matter what room you're playing in, you can play that song, and it's kind of a perfect song because you sing the melody he sings, and then you get the audience to do the take on me response, right? And then you let them all hit the high note together at the end, and everybody's just addicted to that. And that nice. And the synth riff that starts the song is just iconic, and everybody knows it kind of the minute you start playing it.
There was a dueling piano bar I used to go to, I think it was in the Inland Empire. It was like Pomona area. And I'm almost certain this song came up a few times.
I'm sure it did. Man. It's an iconic track. It really is.
No, it's and on that note of just audience participation, my memories is just always karaoke. It's it's always comes on. And it's always a grand time, like Bohemian Rhapsody. It's inevitable. Sure, it might take 6 fucking minutes, but
right.
But everyone loves it.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, getting started as a dueling piano player is a really hard thing to do. At the bar I trained at, you had to memorize 100 songs before you could do a full shift.
Wow.
And that's a lot of work. But I think this was kind of the first song I ever learned that I realized I could lean on at any point in the night. And to be clear, a dueling piano shift can last 6 to 8 hours. You're not singing that entire time, but you have to be on or near the stage for that kind of time. And so you have to really be able to read the room and get a sense of when they're ready to get started partying. And this is one of those songs you could always play and people would just be ready to go nuts.
Yeah. And I'm curious, just more from like a technical standpoint of this. What about if there's a song that you don't know? Do you just know the chords and poke around or improvise it or just tell them I'm sorry?
I have no idea how dueling piano players did that before iPads. But now we all have iPads in front of us, and you know, there's a website like Ultimate Guitar where people there's just crowdsourced lead sheets essentially.
Right.
You can look up the chords and the lyrics, and so like if I'm at a point now, not to brag or anything, but no, like if I've heard a song once or twice, I can probably fake it.
Yeah.
If I've got the chords and the lyrics in front of me, if it's not too difficult, then I can probably do it.
Nice.
But that's kind of the stuff you live for when you're playing is the stuff that you don't know if you can do it. It's a little bit of a roller coaster. But two of my favorite memories from when I lived in Boston doing this. One was when somebody requested the song Foreplay/Long Time by the band Boston, which for those of you who don't know is like this epic, ridiculous instrumental to start with, and then it's just this really great pop rock song at the end. And a band just kind of simultaneously came together around it, because this bar had guitar and bass and drums behind the pianos for people to pick up if they knew it. And we just kind of came together and played through the whole thing spontaneously, and it was wonderful. And then there was another night I had to play on like a Tuesday, and there was like literally no one in the bar. There were maybe one or two people, and they were just interested in the Red Sox game or whatever. And so I took it upon myself to play through all of American Idiot to see if I could.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That's fun.
It was a blast. It was an absolute blast. And it turns out, yes, I could.
Yes.
I was thoroughly, that was a landmark album for me growing up, and I still had it ingrained in my head, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's one of my favorites. I know a lot of people are like, no, it's all Dookie. And, what's the other one? Nimrod, I think. But no, I love American Idiot so much.
Such a great record. Yeah, yeah. I really, really love it. And such a big step forward for that band. I'm from the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And so they mean a lot to me. And my first ever show was, I think it's called Oracle Park now. It's where the Giants played baseball in San Francisco. 47,000 people outdoors, Flogging Molly, Jimmy Eat World, and Green Day as the headliner.
Oh my God, that's a great lineup.
It was a pretty, and that was kind of the night I decided I was going to go into music. That was kind of it. Yeah.
That's a really good. What year was that?
2015.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I saw Green Day probably. It must have been like 2017, 2018. I forgot who they played with. It was at the Rose Bowl, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, great show.
And Billy Joe is a one-of-a-kind frontman. He is really an amazing just showman.
Yep. And they've still got the energy after
all these years. For sure. I thought Mother of All was actually a pretty fun record.
Yeah, it's different, but it's good in its own way.
So. Yeah, well, they've always had that kind of Kinks, dancey-ish sort of thing to them, and there's a lot of that on that record. It's fun.
Yeah, and they sampled, I think, like Joan Jett on it. Am I thinking of the same record? I think so. Maybe one they just put out last year, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they sampled like a Joan Jett song. It's fun. It's really good and high energetic. So
I think I think it's like 12 songs, but it's only 30 minutes. It's a very, that's a punk quick record album.
For you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Circling back to Aha. I love tangents. Everyone knows
yes.
that.
I listen to your podcast. Yes, you do.
And thank you. And thank you for listening. what do you think the song is about?
That is a very good question. This strikes me as a song that is clearly written by somebody who does not speak English as a first language. I think it's just kind of a basic love song and a guy trying to woo a girl before he leaves town, apparently. But there is some very awkward lyric choices and phrasing in it. Just the phrase "take on me" is not something I don't think I have ever said outside of the context of. I don't think I've ever said those three words in that order outside of the context of this song.
No, or "take me on," which they also switch up at one point.
Well, and I've said, you know, when you're hiring somebody, you could say we're going to take him on or something like that. You know, like that's a little bit more believable. But to say "take on me" and then to immediately afterwards say "take me on." Like, why? How? Like, what?
It's in case the first way doesn't work. Hey, we'll back it up. Take me on.
Yeah. Well, there's an apocryphal story about I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys, which mm-hmm. is another song that's kind of just word salad when you listen to the lyrics of it. Mm-hmm. And it's because it was written by a guy named Max Martin, who is Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of his first hit song, and English was his second language. I read that the Backstreet Boys actually recorded a different version of the song with lyrics that made sense. and after they listened to it, they were like, nah, the first version's so much better.
Yeah.
I think you're not paying that much attention to what he's saying in the song. It doesn't matter that much, but it is just kind of if you read through it, like literally, it does come across as kind of awkward.
Yeah. And I did a little bit of research on the wording of it. And it does seem like it's kind of lost in translation. Where did I pick this up? I think genius.com said that it's more kind of an intimate level of it, because "take on me" when translated to Norwegian, which is where they're from, means I don't speak Norwegian, so I'm gonna butcher this, ta pa meg, which is how you say "touch me" over there. So rather than "hey, take me on and hire me or let me be in a relationship with you," it's more of like, "hey, I want to be close to you."
Yeah, well, you know, "Touch Me" is a major line in the other single off of this album, which I actually spent yesterday listening to.
Oh, nice.
So I wonder if their label made them say, I don't know. Maybe their label was like, yeah, you can't have two songs that say that.
Translated to English.
Yeah, no. It's, yeah.
If they made a sequel to this song, what do you think that would be? Like a part two.
So, you know, I mean, we haven't talked about the music video yet. There is a separate ending to the story of this music video.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's more research I did yesterday, which was news to me.
I don't think I picked that up.
I'll save that for later.
Yeah, let's pocket that.
A sequel to this. I mean, it would have to be a breakup song, probably, right?
That's a circle. Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, there is I'll Be Gone in a Day or Two. But then again, also by the end of the song, it's been shortened to I'll Be Gone in a Day. So that's one of the other great things about the song is that it takes place over the course of a full 24 hours, apparently.
Whoa. I did not even catch that. So, yeah, right? You're completely right. I'm looking at the lyrics right now.
I mean, I guess he's saying in a day or two.
So he's opening it, and then he's like, no, we confirmed the meeting. It's going to be a day.
clearly, he's trying to increase the sense of urgency that they sleep together over the course of the song.
I'll be gone in 5 minutes. This is just
clock's a ticking, lady. Yeah.
Wow, that's a great observation. I did not even clock that.
So I mean, it's kind of a hard song to. Maybe he comes back and tries to sleep with her again. I don't totally know. It is a. Do you have an instinct on that?
I don't know. Thinking about this more, I'll be gone in a day. Are they dying or are they just leaving?
I think he's just leaving. Okay. I mean, yeah, there's nothing. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, so he's saying it's no better to be safe than sorry. So he's saying take a risk. So he's kind of a rambling man.
Okay, so he's in town.
A vagabond, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, nomad.
Maybe he's in a band or something.
Yeah, could be literally. Yeah, I see that.
And I did learn that the lead singer of this band, Morten Harket is his name.
Great name.
Or as I will likely call him from now on, Norwegian Patrick Swayze. he fathered children with three different women, so this may have been a life theme of his.
Oh wow. Yeah, I didn't look too much into Mort's solo life. But yeah, it could be something that resonated with him.
I thought this band was Swedish, and I was so excited to call him Swedish Swayze for the rest of this podcast. But we'll have to call him Norwegian Swayze.
Norwegian Swayze. Yeah. No, he's got every article that I looked up is like, wait, why does this handsome guy also have this incredible voice? That's not fair.
Yeah.
It's like when hot people do stand up. It's you're not supposed to be funny and hot. It's one or the other.
Right? It's a pain in the ass. I can swear on this, right?
Yeah. You're okay. Good.
Cool. I've been all right. Then the floodgates are about to burst.
Holy fucking shit. No. Yep.
You just wait.
Up next, after a break, Jake is going to get canceled. if you could describe this song in three words, what would those three words be?
1980s.
I don't think anyone stretched it to syllables yet. I love that.
I think that's it. This song is just so synonymous with a specific era of time.
Yeah.
That I don't know how else saying synth pop would be redundant.
Even
right? It's yeah.
The 1985 in general just had a lot of great media out. I think Back to the Future came out. I didn't pull up everything, but I know a lot of really good monumental things specifically came out in 1985.
Yeah, I want to say either 85 or 84 was the year that like Purple Rain beat out Thriller for best album at the Grammys.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, yeah, this mid 80s time was pretty prolific. Excuse me, in terms of cultural touchstones that we still think about. And the fact that this video stands out is pretty remarkable, given all of that.
Yeah, and it holds up. It doesn't look
And this song. I should stop talking about the video, but the song also stands out. Yes.
Oh, that's okay. That's actually, again, perfect. You're throwing up the volleyball. I'm spiking it. We'll talk about the music video right after we come from break, which we will head into now. And welcome back to Wonders, One Hit Wonder Podcast. You're still listening. It's still my voice. It's still Ian. And with me is still Jake Kasman.
Hi.
That's Jake Kasman, which kind of sounded like me a little bit there. That was like an impression of me, I think. of course, we're at the Monumental event talking about the music video. It's hard. Yeah. Not to talk about the song without talking about the music video for this. It's one of the most well-known music videos of all time. I just hit a chair. That hurt.
That's how much you needed to drive this point home.
Yes, I will hit the chair again.
Yes.
It sounds like a gong.
Yeah, you're like Wayne Coyne on the Flaming Lips gig.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking Gonzo, but I like that better.
All right.
Even playing this music video this morning, I think it had like a billion views or something.
It's one. I saw this. It was the fifth music video from before 2000 to get over a billion views on YouTube. And the others are like, November Rain and Thriller and Smells Like Teen Spirit and one other.
Yeah. All other karaoke staples.
Yes. Yes.
It's almost more well known than the song itself. The music video has been parodied many times. It's directed
speaking of parodies, the Family Guy cutaway is one of my favorites.
I saw that mentioned a few times. I did not actually watch it yet. Animated still then, or how does that play out?
They're at the grocery store and just the hand from the music video comes out and pulls what's Peter's son's name? The Seth Green character.
Stewie?
No, the older kid.
Brian's the dog. I haven't watched it that many times.
The blonde haired.
The one with the hat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. The one with the hat.
This is sad that we're failing on this. But yeah, the hand just kind of comes out of like an aisle of canned foods and grabs him and pulls him into the music video for a second. And he gets really into it and is serenaded by Norwegian Swayze.
Modern day or they use the music video?
No, they fake rotoscope him in.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost one of those things where I think we might have mentioned this on the podcast before, where you probably know a parody of this music video before you've ever seen the music video itself, that it's been sucked into media so many times.
For sure. Yeah. Well, and it's kind of worth mentioning, we skipped over this in the last section, but if you go all the way back through this song, the band that the two guys that are not Norwegian Swayze were in had put out I think their band was called Bridges.
I think I saw that as well. Yes.
And the verse of this song, that's almost punk ska, is exactly the same as the verse that, or melodically, and even with the keys hook that ends up becoming the verse to Take On Me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, they record the song once they've become Aha. They put it out as a music video of just them playing, against like a blue background with like a random ballet dancer and leg warmers.
Yeah, just a standard music video.
Yep, but it's also just, it's definitely not as well produced. Mm-hmm. And so then the band isn't happy with it, so they re-record it. They put out the single again. It doesn't get any traction. And then they put out the single a third time with this music video, and that's when it takes off.
That's crazy, because a lot of times, at least I think we've done maybe a dozen episodes, almost every time it happens by accident, where they put out the music video and then it becomes a huge hit. Like, they don't keep trying at it, but they must have had that much faith in this song They're like, no, it's a hit, goddammit. People will like... that's like what I
think I remember reading that the keys player in this band had been playing with some version of that riff since he was in like middle school or something. Wow. So like this was a landmark thing for them, and they knew it before even they got signed. But then of course this music video took it to a whole other level.
Yeah, and they knew it. I don't have that much faith in anything. That's like if I tweeted a joke out 3 different times and people are like, no, Ian, god damn it, it's not gonna work. But and I'm like, no, the audiences will love. I've been working on this joke since middle school. It's to have that much faith in your own work is astounding. And they were right, because it's got 1 billion views on YouTube now.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were going to talk about the director real quick.
Oh, yeah. The director, all I have is a little footnote, directed by Steve Barron, who's worked included Don't You Want Me by the Human League and Billie Jean by Michael Jackson, directed those as well. I've seen
and
Billie
he
Jean.
Went, you know, did you see what else he directed?
No.
The Coneheads movie.
What? Hold on. the SNL one?
I believe
well,
so.
I don't know what other one there is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Irish, British film
and
director.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'd forgotten that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Adventures of Pinocchio. I'm pulling up his Wikipedia right now. Superman? Oh, he was assistant cameraman on Superman, the very
yes.
first one.
I did see that.
Wow. Good for him. Oh, yeah, he's got a lot of music videos under David Bowie. He's got Fleetwood Mac in here, Madonna, Paul McCartney.
I watched the video for Billie Jean again, which is also iconic. But the really strange one he directed, I guess it looks like he directed like 8 different ones for Aha. The other one I watched was the video for Money for Nothing by Dire Straits.
Oh yes, that's a great one.
And that is a strange music video, but
yes.
it's like one of the first computer animated music videos ever. Mm-hmm. And it's interpolated with live footage of Dire Straits playing the song with, co-writer and co-performer Sting. But the computer animation is just so dated and strange. It's interesting. And it's interesting that that's something he kept trying to incorporate into his music videos, is experimenting with live action with animation.
Yeah. And even those like old 3D animated, it kind of holds up that it goes back all the way around where it almost looks good again. It looks like a choice, you know?
I guess, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's circling back 360 and becoming intentional to do that again.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it certainly is in a place in time. That is for damn sure.
Absolutely.
It also looks like in 1985, he also directed the videos for Heaven and Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams.
Oh, wow.
So this man was, yeah, left his imprints on the 80s musically for sure. And the music videos for Africa and Rosanna by Toto.
Oh,
damn. This guy.
He's still making some stuff. It doesn't look like music videos as much anymore. But he's still staying busy with TV projects, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you. I keep wanting to say Steve Bannon, and that's
completely
not correct. It's Steve Barron.
Yes.
Hats off to you.
For sure.
And you mentioned that you listened to some of their other songs. Did you listen to this whole album? What'd you listen to?
I listened to this album, which is called Hunting High and Low. Take on Me is the first track, which shows you again how insistent they were that this was going to be a hit. It's fine. I don't know. It didn't exactly blow me away. the one of the other singles on the song is the only other one I kind of liked. It's called The Sun Always Shines on TV.
Yes.
Which is a features a video also by Steve Barron, which is just them performing in a church to a bunch of mannequins. but that video starts with, and I hinted with this, it starts with the intro is the conclusion to the story told in the Take On Me video.
Oh, wow. So it's a continuation. Wait, yeah, let's go back to that. What's the extended cut?
It just kind of starts with with Norwegian Swayze and his girlfriend out in the forest somewhere, and they kind of look like they're about to break up, and then Norwegian Swayze starts fading back into comic book form, and they kind of part ways, and he eventually just goes poof.
Oh wow! Is the song still playing under it?
Yeah, well, the song kind of starts with like an airy intro version of the chorus. And so the drums kick in after he goes poof. And then there's like the end Warner Brothers Pictures slide. And then it goes into the next music video. Yeah, I don't know. It was a choice.
So wait, if the Sun Never Shines on TV picks up where that left, is it back in cartoon world?
No, they just cut to the band performing in this strange church with mannequins in it.
Oh.
They don't ever really explain it.
It's the next page of that Aha magazine.
I think it was probably just like a label choice being like, we have to let the world know that this is the same band that did this other music.
Oh, yes.
Right? We have to allude to it somehow.
Yeah, they knew what was working, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I poked around, listened to a couple seconds of each, or not a couple seconds, I listened to more than that, of each of the other songs on this record. And The Sun Never Shines on TV was definitely one that stood out. I feel like I'd even heard it before. It sounds strangely familiar.
Yeah, in that way that, like, I don't know, that happens to me every time I hear, like, a song by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Oh, yeah.
Or certain bands from the 80s. I swear to God, I've heard this before. But it's probably just because everybody else did something like this.
Yeah, their own version. Or maybe it was featured in a soundtrack on like...
Well, yeah, and there's just some synths from that time period that were just ubiquitous.
Yes.
And so they're you know, everybody bought one of the same model. And I'm not enough of a gearhead to remember exactly which one off the top of my head. But there are some of those like that. But yeah, Sun Always Shines on TV is a pretty good track. The rest of the record is surprisingly symphonic. That song has a lot of strings in it. There's some other songs with strings in it. There's one song that it sounds to me like it straight up just has like a repeatedly featured clarinet solo.
Oh, wow.
yeah, there are some choices made. yeah, that was, needless to say, not my favorite song on the record.
No, they had some good, like, New Order sounding songs, which I love. New Wave.
Yeah, that kind of programmed, like, double pedal bass drum beats happening.
Yes.
That sound a lot like Blue Monday, for sure.
Yes.
For which, sure. Though decidedly lighter in production. They were not going for the heavy darkness.
No. More poppy. More poppy.
Yeah.
If this song, Take On Me, was made today... who do you think would be the one to make it in a world where Aha didn't exist?
So I have thought a lot about this question
mm-hmm.
because I'm a listener and this question always excited me. I think there are two possibilities. And it depends on whether or not English is your first language mm-hmm. and whether or not you're writing a song like this ironically or not, because mm-hmm. that's the era in which we live. If you are an English speaker, then to write a song like this now, you would have to be doing it ironically.
Absolutely.
I think. And you'd need a guy who has this kind of range, but also dramatically sounds like different people depending on where he's singing.
Mm-hmm.
So my first choice for this would be the 1975.
Oh, I could definitely see that. I listen to them quite a bit. And they mimic these sounds a lot.
They do. Their 80s nostalgia is very much a part of what they do.
Yes, which is ironic because they're the 1975, not the 1985.
Terrible band name. Pretty good band. Terrible band name.
I think I've talked about where it's hard to Google the 1975. Although they're bigger now, it's easier to Google now. But like back in the heyday of like their first EP, it was hard to Google the 1975 because bands don't pop up under that or that band Red, you know, where it's just mm-hmm. named a noun. It's hard to Google.
or the.
The. Oh, that's another one. With former Smiths members. I forget who's in it.
Oh, is that true? I didn't know that.
I think so. I think it's Johnny. Is that one of the Smiths members? It's been a minute since I've listened to them. But I think it's comprised of at least one or two former Smiths members. Yeah.
Okay. The band name is pretentious enough for me not to be surprised.
But they have some good songs too. But I was thinking along the same lines of like, oh, it's got to tread at least somewhat on ironic terms.
Unless English is not your first language.
Yes. I bet just like a TikTok star would probably make this song. Probably in like the format of.
I'm sure there. It'll become a dance at some point.
Oh, probably it'll that
come
too.
Back around. Yeah. But so my other choice was BTS.
Ooh, that's a good one too. And know what? As mega popular as they are, I don't think I've still heard a single song of theirs.
Oh, really?
Which I should. Which is on me. I know they're huge. They're probably super talented. Probably super catchy. But I haven't listened to them yet.
I believe there's seven of them, which is a lot. Like, just it's just a lot.
Yeah, that's more than a ska band.
Yeah, basically. And yeah, and none of you play anything. You just sing. Okay. They got some catchy English language songs. But again, like I think there is something to the quality of this song and its earnestness that makes you kind of look past the word salad of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
That if English is not your first language, that's kind of where this lies.
Yeah.
So I think they could easily do it. And like I said, when I first heard the song, I thought there were four different people singing. So they can just kind of rotate people through.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. I wonder if they have covered it. Really good answer.
Did you listen to the covers of this? Because I listened to a few of those,
God.
Too.
That's the next subject. Let's talk about that. God. There's so many. I looked, like, I think I even Googled it. How many covers of A-ha's Take On Me are there? Like, at least 81 different covers popped up, which there's even more on YouTube. That's just what they have released that you can buy. God, it must be one of the most covered songs ever.
I'm sure. Yeah. Because, I mean, well, it's funny, though, because it's such a hard song to sing.
Yeah.
That so many people would give it a shot. I mean, it is kind of a... it's a ballsy song to do at karaoke. It's one of the reasons why everybody chooses it, because I can show off my range. But yeah, no, I'm sure there's a part of that in the reason why people choose to cover it. Do you know what the most covered song of all time is?
I believe it's Hallelujah by Leonard
Cohen.
Oh,
is it? Is that what it is now?
I think so. I heard that somewhat recently. Which makes sense. There's a decent amount of covers for that.
So I thought I read interesting. Okay, some people say it's Yesterday by the Beatles.
Ooh, that makes sense.
Which also makes sense.
Yeah.
I heard that at least at one point it was Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel.
Huh.
Which seemed like a very strange choice, but again, a pretty kind of impressive vocal performance.
Yeah. And it's a good song, just not one that I would expect Metallica to cover or whatnot. Just
yeah,
the most sheer amount number of different bands
there
covering the song. It's been covered. I wrote down at least some of the bands. Weezer somewhat mm-hmm. recently. Real
For like
Big
a
Fish.
SpongeBob movie?
I think they put it on their Teal album. I think it was also in the SpongeBob movie, but okay. It was for their album of covers
right.
that they just put out. Africa's on there, I think.
You and I have discussed our love of Weezer before.
I believe we have. I love Weezer.
I have to say, the two covers I've heard off of the Teal album mostly feel like regurgitations and left me a little lacking.
I agree. They don't really deviate. I don't really touch that album, but it's fun. It got them back on the charts and everything.
Yeah, well, they brought Africa back, which I'm always okay with.
Yeah, it got them back on a lot of non-Weezer fans' radar again. And they're like, oh, wait, the Buddy Holly band is back? Cool.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, yeah, they put out like an album every year. But yeah, I'm glad you're on board.
They are amazingly prolific.
Yeah. Did you listen to their new one?
You know, I haven't. I listened to a podcast with Rivers and Rick Rubin discussing it.
Ooh.
But I have not delved into it, though. I've heard good reviews.
Yeah. Also, similar to this, very orchestra-based.
Yes.
Almost the whole album. I think it's a quarantine album, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they were saying that. Yes.
At least and mostly.
Yeah. I mean, and that band was always kind of Beach Boys meets Pavement. So
yep, that's like, a good description.
them leaning into the Pet Sounds ideal is definitely something that you could have seen coming.
Yes. And I'm all for that, more of the indie rock side rather than, but the pop stuff is fun too. They goof off and have fun. So
for sure. They've always had a very strong pop sense. But I mean, I think one of the things that rubbed people a lot wrong about Green Day for a long time is that they just write. So, you know, I was listening to the song Redundant the other day, which if you just rearranged it, it could have been done by like the Temptations.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a Motown track, but you know, they do power chords because that's all they know how to do. And it's awesome.
This actually came up, I think it was Dave Grohl on Conan's podcast. I'm talking about podcasts on podcasts. But he doesn't know how to read music. That blew my mind.
That's right.
He just plays what sounds good. And that blows my mind that someone could have such a huge career and not, I think a couple of these one hit wonder bands that we've talked about as well on this podcast don't know how to read music. They just plunk around on the chords on what sounds about right and go with it. And it works out.
Oh no, there's plenty of, there are more people like that in the music business than you might expect. If you want some real fun on YouTube, there's a clip of Harry Connick Jr. He was a guest, I think a while ago, and in front of the audience, he has to explain to Jennifer Lopez what the pentatonic scale is.
Wow!
Which is like the thing that made you millions of dollars. The thing you've been relying on. Yeah. Wow. By the way, this let me explain. It's the five notes that you've been singing your entire life. So it's pretty fun. It's amazing. And I'm not to be pretentious and stuff, but I'm actually in grad school for music education right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we're talking more and more about is that I think a lot of music teachers lean on formal music theory as a thing that they say needs to be taught, but in a lot of ways it doesn't, especially now that you have programs like GarageBand and stuff where people can literally just kind of click and drag notes and figure things out. Like, you don't need music theory until you start trying to have a real widespread language to express the thing you've already written. You don't need to know it in order to create music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty revolutionary idea, especially in like graduate school for music, because they are still very much staying in stuck in archaic traditions like classical music. not to betray my feelings on the subject, all music has its place, but
yes.
I am very sick of certain formalist biases that I find in my program.
Oh, I agree. And in general, I mean, in comedy especially, if anyone ever tells me this is the only way to be funny or the only way to do, I don't know, roofing, I don't know, naming random things, that's usually wrong.
Yes.
There's different ways of doing it. We could do it your way. We could do it from the other way. We could combine them, see what works. There's never only one way to do things.
Yeah, well, to bring things back around, listening to Hunting High and Low, this album, you definitely could tell they're first of all, it's very much a keyboard driven album. That keyboard player is the guy who was clearly coming up with all of their hooks. But if you have a keyboardist who's kind of the main driving force behind your songwriting, you're going to have some stuff that clearly usually demonstrates some music theory, because piano was kind of the instrument on which music theory was based, at least Western music theory. It's based around understanding how a piano works, because Bach, who's the guy who basically invented it all. But if you learn on, like, I'm taking guitar lessons right now and trying to teach myself that, and that is a completely different thing. And if you listen to a song like the opening lick to maybe Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden, that is a series of notes that if you grew up playing piano like I did, that is a series of notes you would never think to play.
Wow.
Just because of the way that they're organized in front of you, whereas on the guitar, it makes a lot more sense.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and so that was, I tried covering that actually at a dueling piano show. Somebody requested it, and I started trying to figure out how those notes fit together, and that was kind of the moment it clicked to me. I actually have to learn how to play guitar, because that's going to teach me an entirely different way to write music.
Yeah, because I think Cornell was more guitar-based. I don't think he played keys.
I don't think so. He was actually a pretty underrated guitarist. If you listen to some of his solo acoustic shows, there are some live albums, and he's actually very good. His the lead guitarist in Soundgarden kind of got paid by the note. He was a little too show-offy for my taste. but there are some real cool licks that Chris can play on his own. I don't know why I said Steve, probably because I was thinking of Steve Barron, but
yeah, Steve, the other one that I keep almost saying Bannon. So where have you read up on where they're at today, what they're up to?
Yeah, they kind of broke up and got back together like three times, and now they're broken up again, right?
Yeah, I think that's about what I read. I think they're mostly broken up because of pandemic. It looked like they still had basically dates all over the world planned out.
Oh, really?
For like a whole year, they were planning to just tour around Peru and Argentina and the UK and stuff. And then they put it on hold because
I know they did like an MTV Unplugged show in 2017.
Yeah, and it looks like it's pretty popular, that acoustic version of not just Take On Me, but the other songs as well. It looks like it was pretty well received.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, that is the iconic one. I was actually talking with somebody about this last night ahead of doing this, and he was saying that he'd watched the show, and it had the largest collection of thirsty Gen X women he'd ever seen.
And he still looks good. I saw a picture of him. Like, yeah, good on him. So
yeah, no, he looks like a older Norwegian Patrick Swayze.
Yep. I think there were three of them, right?
Yes.
But good on them. Still living out their best lives. And they're still putting out records. I think they put one out, at least one or two out in the last decade. So they're still, and I'm sure on the Take On Me money alone, they're set for life. They could do whatever they want.
A billion views on YouTube, man. That's got to be,
insane.
That's got to be running through. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a couple of trivia questions for you. Multiple choice. You said you did some deep diving. So I think we might have talked about some of these. Some of these I know we did not mention at all yet. So we'll see. It's kind of game show format, multiple choice. So we'll see how you do.
Hit me!
All right. First question, they were nominated for a Grammy for Best New Artist in 1986, but they did not win. Who did win that year? Was it Sade, Julian Lennon, or Katrina and the Waves?
Katrina and the Waves. I've not thought about them in a while. I did read the Wikipedia page, so it's Sade, right?
Yep, that's correct. Which
Katrina
not...
and the Waves, they did Walking on Sunshine, right?
I believe you're correct. Yeah, I want to say they have another hit. Maybe they're a one hit wonder as well. Julian Lennon, of course, son of John Lennon. Sade is the one that I'm not as familiar with. I've seen the name before, but I don't think I could name one of their songs.
Same.
But I've seen the name before, so good on them. Best new, and from what I understand, best new artist is kind of a curse. So,
yeah, a little bit,
Though
so, not for you ever listen to Esperanza Spalding?
Esperanza Spalding, don't think so. No,
she's kind of a jazz funk folk artist. Who won? And I think she won. I think she won over Justin Bieber.
Oh wow, that's huge!
And yeah, I know. And she has a very cool underground career, and she's a very cool person as well.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'm just pulling up. I'm curious. Gonna pause the questions real quick. I'm just curious who's won in recent years. Let's see. Billie Eilish. Oh yeah, she'll be around a while. Chance the Rapper, Sam Smith. Okay, it's not a huge curse. Bon Iver, fun. Well, fun, they've retired on
didn't,
their own terms, though.
I want to say, didn't, like, My Chemical Romance beat out Kanye West in, like,
2004, I would love that if
2005?
That.
But that might have been at the MTV Music Awards.
I don't see either of them nominated on here. Oh, wait, here's 2005. Kanye West nominated, but Maroon 5 won. Which Maroon 5's
that might be
doing.
What I'm thinking of.
They're still doing pretty good on their own terms. So.
They are. The music's kind of crap, though.
I agree. So they have a good single every once
there's
in a while.
Yeah, I don't know. No songs about Jane, but yeah.
No, songs about Jane was amazing. Basically, anything up to like 2010 was pretty good.
Yeah. Payphone. Well, I actually really liked, I liked Payphone as a song.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of songs they put out now that I just don't like. This could be by literally anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of that, what is that, Fall Out Boy? Or they're doing more pop stuff now. Where it's,
I'm trying to think of who else.
Good, but
like
also...
you could literally just have Pitbull rapping over this. speaking of which, one thing I forgot to mention is
did the Pitbull song cover this
of Take On Me.
We did.
So there, well, it's not a cover, but it's a sample. There's a song that he did with Christina Aguilera called Feel This Moment. That's based entirely around the synth part, the opening keys hook.
Oh wow. I don't think I knew that. I didn't even mention that it's been in a million movies and TV shows and everything. I just finished Last of Us 2, the video game.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a huge gamer, but it's featured in that, like, as a pretty big plot point. Where it's just
Take On Me is?
Yeah, as an acoustic song. As, like, a heart moment where you're supposed to feel for the character. And I did not expect it. And it hit the feels. That's all. Just a side note on that. But I did not see it coming. And I probably spoiled it for everyone else. It's not a spoiler, but I didn't expect it.
Fair enough.
Question number two. They had a song in a James Bond film. We haven't mentioned that yet. Which James Bond movie was it? Was it A View to Kill, Living Daylights, or Octopussy?
Oh, God. All Roger Moore, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think those are all
I think
Roger
all
Moore
Timothy
types?
Dalton, if I'm not mistaken, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's
no idea.
I'm not as familiar with Bond films.
So the first one was called A View to Kill?
A View to Kill, Living Daylights, and Octopussy, yeah.
I'm picking straws. Let's go with Living Daylights.
That's correct. Yeah.
Oh!
I think I wrote down 1987. That sounds about right.
Okay.
Yeah, they did. The song is also called Living Daylights. It's pretty good. It feels like an 80s song. You know.
Okay. I guess it would be the title track that they did. Yeah.
Are James Bond movies always named after the title track?
Well, I think the songs are named after the movie.
Oh, yes, that's what I meant. Yes,
I believe that's the case. I don't think Paul McCartney was like, "Hey, I got this song called Live and Let Die." And the producers are like, dude, that's the next movie we're making.
What?
I'm sorry if that's disappointing for you.
It's cool that they would pick.
Is there a song for Octopussy? Who fucking wrote that?
Bond songs. Let's see. Yeah, and No Time to Die is a new one from Billie Eilish.
Right.
So that makes sense that each one would be named after the movie.
Well, Adele had a really good one.
Adele.
Chris Cornell had a really good one.
That's true. Yeah, full circle.
Though he did not name it Casino Royale. But it's just called.
It's not all of them.
So that one's called You Know My Name, I think. And it's really good.
Yeah, I have heard that one. Die Another Day, I know, was another one.
Madonna, right? Madonna. That was a terrible movie.
Oh, here we go. I want to see who did the Octopussy one. John Barry, Tim Rice, and Stephen Short. Oh, Rita Coolbridge. Not too familiar with.
Is the song called Octopussy?
It's called All Time High.
Okay.
And then the year after that was Duran Duran, and then Aha, and then we got Gladys Knight. Cool that they fit in some pop rock bands in here. That's unusual.
Yeah. Wasn't there a Jack White Alicia Keys collab?
There was Quantum of Solace, Another Way to Die.
Yes.
Also not named after the movie that it was in.
Got it. Yeah. But they're all alternate titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, it looks like. And then Bono and the Edge wrote for Tina Turner. I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, the GoldenEye song.
Oh,
I know they wrote that for Tina Turner.
The only good movie Pierce Brosnan got to make.
The only no Mamma Mia.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
I
hear he can't sing though, and but I meant the only. I thought he was a pretty good Bond who just got shafted with his scripts, man.
Yeah, I haven't seen. I think I've seen two of the what's his name, Daniel Craig once. I want to say one of the other ones, but yeah, not. I haven't seen a lot of Bond movies. I just want to take a holiday weekend and watch them all. You know.
Yeah, why not? Why not? There's like 27 of them now?
Oh God, I think
22,
there's more.
Maybe just 22.
I took a community college class. We're supposed to be acting, and I'm not a huge actor or anything. it was supposed to be acting, and he's now a huge podcaster, Matt Gorley. he works mostly on Conan's podcast, and he was a teacher of that class before he got into podcasting and everything. And 90% of that class was just ranking the Bond movies. and he has a whole podcast about that now, too, about ranking the Bond movies. Yeah, and it's not that they're bad, just not my extreme cup of tea.
I get it.
But they're fun. They're fun.
Yeah.
Next question. How many times do they say the phrase, take on me? Is it 15, 10, or 69?
Wow.
And specifically, take on me, not take me on.
Right. You said 10, 15, or 69?
Yep.
You dirty scoundrel, you. I'm going to guess 15.
15 is correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had to be. I literally did the math in my head. They say it three times each chorus.
Yep.
And then there's
correct.
The fade out.
Yep.
So
that's correct. Yeah. I had trouble counting it because they say take me on, which is confusing.
Well, and then they start kind of overlapping it at
the
end, too.
I just counted it for what was written in the lyrics. So maybe vocally you could hear more. And maybe they say it 69 times and I'm completely wrong. Mail in your questions that I won't get to until season two. How many MTV Music Awards did they win for this song? Was it 3, 6, or of course, 69?
Man, you are nothing if not consistent.
Yeah, that's correct.
6, right?
They won 6.
Yeah,
you got that right. And their combined total for that, for one music video, give them twice as many wins as Michael Jackson's Thriller which had the highest award count at the time.
Thriller only won 3?
Yeah, which I don't think the music award show had been going on that long, so I don't think it was a huge feat.
Gotcha. But like now, I said, that was the same year that Purple Rain came out, so I think they probably split some awards.
Yeah, and like, does the movie count? I don't. If the movie counts as one big music video, I don't know how they do that. And even now, there's only 2 other people that have a higher award count for one music video for that award show. And that's
higher than Take On Me?
Yeah. Let's see if you could guess, actually. This is not a trivia question, just curious.
So we've won more than 6 VMAs?
Yes, for one music video.
For one music
video. For the same music video, yeah.
Oh, God.
Honestly, neither of these I would have expected, but it makes sense. Yeah.
Taylor Swift, Love Story?
Ooh, that's a good one. Around the same time, we got Lady Gaga's Bad Romance.
Okay.
Which I can't think of the music video even for that offhand.
I think I remember that. I think she's like getting sold at an auction or something.
The other one I watched actually this morning because I'd never seen it. I'm like, oh, I'm curious what it even looks like. And it was fun. Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer.
That is a hell of a music video.
Yeah, it's a lot of stop motion, it looked like.
Yes. And some animation and stuff happening too. And it was, again, very ahead of its time for the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't expect it, but it made sense once I watched it. And it caught me up on too. More Peter Gabriel.
Dude, he's got some really great music. And also, he and Phil Collins were in the same band. That's a pretty crazy coincidence.
Yeah, that's a super group of sorts. I keep trying. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go through all of Genesis. So kind of like you said, just knocking all 3 out.
There's a lot of Genesis.
There's a lot. 2, I just keep going back to face value because it's so good. I'm just like, oh, this is good, but it's no face value.
I do. I got to say, I think I like Phil's stuff better with Genesis than on his own. I mean, he's got a few, like Against All Odds and In the Air Tonight and You Can't Hurry Love, the cover.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know, Face Value is a good tune or a good record. But I don't know. I just love his stuff with Genesis a little bit more.
I don't know as much of his stuff. I know like Man on the Corner and I Can't Dance. I think those are the 2 that I mostly know.
Oh, man. Misunderstanding's a great song.
Oh, I know that, which I thought was just a Phil Collins song.
There are a lot of those that can't be mistaken for that. That's All is another really great Genesis song.
Oh, I know that one. Yes.
That also could be mistaken as sounding like that. Yeah. If you want to hear a freakishly awesome vocal performance, listen to the song Mama by Genesis.
I don't think I know that one.
It is I did not know it either until I think I was into my Genesis listen and an article on The Ringer or something came out about Phil Collins and about that song in particular. But holy shit. And it's real creepy too.
Mama.
A very interesting choice, but if I ever do one of like The Voice or something, that is one of the songs I would try and do on that show.
Nice.
Because it's that kind of fireworks. Yeah.
I'll add that to the queue. Listen to that later.
Do it. Mama by Genesis. That's a monster.
Mama by Genesis.
Yeah.
And we got one more question in here. They picked their manager, Terry Slater, because he had what arcade game cabinet in his recording studio? Was it Pac-Man, Space Invaders, or Time Crisis?
I remember Time Crisis vividly, but this would have been way too early for that.
That's correct. You know that.
Yeah, Space Invaders?
Yeah, yeah. They specifically picked him as their manager because he had Space Invaders. Which is great. That just shows how kickback they are. They don't care what...
Sounds like it worked out for them.
Yep. Yeah, I think you got all of these right, if I'm not mistaken.
I think I did two, if I'm not too
my own horn. Forget to keep track, but I think you got them all right. So congrats.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll head to another break. We'll come back, try and do the improvised segment, and then we'll close it out.
Stay tuned. Alrighty.
Welcome back to Wonders, One Hit Wonder Podcast. That's my voice breaking right there because I'm nearing my old age in life.
That we've been talking for an hour and a half.
Yes. But no, welcome back to Wonders, the One Hit Wonder Podcast. Of course, talking with Jake Kassman here. We just finished up talking about Aha's Take On Me. We're gonna do a little bit of improvised segment, having fun with whatever we've talked about, whether it's any of the tangents we went on. Was there a particular scenario that kind of stood out to you?
The pitch meeting for a Bond song could be fun.
Oh, that's a good point. Let's see, pitch meeting for a Bond song. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
So yeah, one of us executive, and the other one would be, what's his name, Mort? Something. Oh yeah, Swedish. Swiss.
Oh yes. Swedish. Right. Swedish. Or no, Norwegian Swayze. Norwegian Swayze. What is it? Is it Morgan Harris?
I think it's Morton.
Morton Harkett?
Yeah. Morton.
Morton Harkett. That is.
Yeah, that way we at least have it to reference. Morton Harkett.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Wait, so do we know who is who yet? Or
I don't think we do. Do you have a preference?
I don't care. Should we just find out?
Right. Yeah, we'll just find out. We'll
okay.
Come in. Come in.
Oh, thanks. It's nice to be here.
It's an honor to have
you. Hair out of his face.
Thank you for coming all the way to New York City, to my record studio.
It's a six-hour flight, but it's warmer here and more daylight. It's nice.
You probably have your own private plane at this point. I saw your music video. It's blowing up all over the world. Good for you.
Yes, so we thought it would be nice to write a song in which a lot of things blow up.
Yeah, a lot of things blow up in James Bond movies, which is why I wanted you, the hot commodity. That way we can make more money, and I give some of that money to you, but I also keep a lot for myself as a record executive. But yeah, do you have any ideas of what you wanted to see in a James Bond movie song?
Well, you know, we have been thinking that perhaps James Bond songs lean a little too hard on the noir spy sound.
Oh, really?
So we want to try and mix things up a little bit for the great actor Roger Moore. We were thinking actually that we have this really sweet xylophone hook that we've been playing with.
Now, I do have a xylophone actually right here. I'll let me clap twice and it'll come right out of the ceiling. It's pretty cool.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Now that's the kind of money that I hope to see when perhaps music videos can be shared over electronically between home computers.
Whoa, you're blowing my mind right now. Please play a lick of what you're thinking on the xylophone here.
Mm-hmm, yes. Ding, 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 ding. Ding, 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 ding.
Now, that sounded a little too Christmassy to me.
Oh, now,
sorry. Think more murder. More murder.
More murder. Okay.
More murder. Mm.
more murder. Got it. Ding 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 ding.
Ho ho! Again, that sounded pretty Christmassy. You added a ho ho at the end.
Yes. Sorry. That was Paul. Why did you do that? Paul. Yeah, don't say ho ho.
Well, that's I'm sorry. I just thought that it sounded really nice right there. It sounded very Christmassy. I do agree with Mr. Broccoli here.
Did. Yeah, sorry, oh. Mr. Broccoli.
It's okay. I get it a lot. A lot of people come in here, they try and pitch Bond films, and they sound like Christmas songs. Every single time.
Very strange. Very strange.
Now, again, think more Bond. You know, sexy lady. I'll hear you out one more time.
Okay. Ding, 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 ding. Damn it, Paul. Paul, you're going to get thrown out of this record office, this record executive's office.
I'm used to it at this point. My butt is pretty bruised, and I've got a callus from being thrown out of the record offices.
You sound
a lot like me at this point. What's your deal, Paul? I'm sorry, Mr. Broccoli. We just have similar toned voices.
Yes, but Paul has a bad habit of trying to sound like whoever is running whatever meeting we are in.
Oh, I like that kind of spunk. That's a lot of initiative. But back to you. That was very much a Christmas song.
I'm. Sorry, I guess we just have winter in our bones in Norway.
Say that one more time.
We have winter in our bones?
Winter in our bones. I like that. That is your Bond song.
Oh, yes. I think I know how it could go. Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
right?
I'm
right?
Listening. I'm listening.
Okay. Winter in our bones.
Bond. Bond. I like
Bond.
This.
Yes.
I like this very much. You have the contract.
Yes.
Except you, Phil. Get out of here.
Ooh. I hope his callus holds up after 24 stories.
I'm okay.
Eh, good for you, Paul. You always were the toughest of us.
Oh, yes, I called him Phil. I meant Paul. It's a term of endearment in New York to call people Phil.
Got it. I will say that the next time a cab driver yells at me.
Hey, Phil. it's an honor of Phil Collins.
Yes, the great New York musician, Phil Collins.
Yes. Congratulations, Swedish Swayze.
Ah, thank you. It's Norway, actually. We hate the Swedes. We despise. I was starting to really lean into the anger of the Norway Swedish rivalry.
That pulls back to me prematurely pulling the lights at Second City. in the middle of a sentence, I'm like, oh no, they were still talking. No, you did that great. You did fantastic. And then I realized, oh shit, why am I doing two characters? I put that.
No, that was wonderful. That was really, really, really demonstrated your range there.
Range of one tone. And yeah, you pulled up the Swedish accent, which I can't do any accents at
it's
all.
It's Norwegian. How dare you? Next thing you're gonna call us Finns.
There can't be that many more countries up there. Scotland, I guess, Iceland.
Well, it's the four they in Scandinavia, the fourth country is Denmark for some reason, which is
oh yeah
across
that's
the sea.
Lego one.
Yes.
Yes, I believe that's the Lego one.
I just know the countries for their exports.
yes, Norway is herring. Sweden is furniture. Denmark is Legos, and Finland is sadness. I actually legit remember there being a 60-minute story about how no one smiles in Finland. Like that is an actual thing.
I don't know if we have any Finland listeners, but again, send in your letters about your experiences in Finland, and we'll talk about
if
that.
If we've pissed off somebody in Finland, we know we've made it. That's all I ever aspire to.
At us,
yes. If we can make one person in Finland smile, we've made the world a better place. Ian, thanks.
thank you so much for being on. This has been a joy.
This has been so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. We talked a bit about your plugs at the top that we got out of the way. That way, if anyone turns off in the first 10 minutes, they still got to hear what you're about. But again, let's plug it one more time for everyone to follow you and whatnot.
For sure. So I make music under the band name Drunken Logic, and we have a new EP called It's Only Temporary coming out on March 12th. The new single Lost in February is already available on all streaming platforms. There's also a really cool lyric video for it if you go to the Drunken Logic YouTube page.
Nice.
And while I'm at it, I want to make sure I have the date right. Yes. One of the ways that I know Ian is because we would work together occasionally on something called the Really Awesome Improv Show at Second City.
Yeah.
Which is a kid's version of Whose Line Is It Anyway, basically. That we used to do every Saturday and Sunday in person, back when you could do things in person. And we are now in our second virtual iteration of the Really Awesome Improv Show, and is now once a month at the Second City. And the next version of that is March 20th. You can go to secondcity.com, and I'll be music directing that show on March 20th.
Yeah, highly recommend that show. I don't know what it looks like now, but if it's anything like it was in real life, it's fun. There's a lot of short form improv. A lot of very talented friends of mine up there on stage, and of course behind the keys, a lot of music based song bits.
Yes, there's a whole new ending song that we do, and we also get the kids involved a lot, which is what really makes it fun.
Yes, and a lot of times they have no filter, and I love it.
One of my all time favorite moments from that show, I don't know if you were there, but we'd start a game in the in-person show where we'd ask somebody for their grandma's name, and then we'd ask another kid for what their grandfather's job was.
Oh no.
I think we asked the same kid the same thing, and we said, actually no, we got the grandma's name from somebody else, and then we turned to this one kid and said, you, what did your grandfather do or does for a living? And the kid just turns to the people on stage and goes, he just reads newspapers all day.
Oh, that's so much better than what I thought it was going to be. That's still a solid answer, but I thought it was going to be something bad, like, oh no, he's a war criminal. Or
yeah,
stuff like that would also come up.
He just got extradited to Israel.
but like divorce and death would like unintentionally come up and it killed me.
No, I believe we turned it into a story about a journalist, but that is still just one of the greatest things I've ever heard a child say.
I love that. Oh, I do miss it so much.
I know,
yeah, check
man.
That out. As for me, you can follow at Ian Zandy on everything. This is a bonus episode, so hopefully sometime over the summer or maybe the fall when I don't have as much on my plate, I'll keep doing this again. We have a lot of guests that are very much interested in doing this still, so I want to keep it going, just conserving time. So probably do a dozen of these at a time. I think that's a good and fair
I think you're
strategy.
Allowed. I think you're allowed.
Yeah.
Do you and you can edit this out or not, but the other song I was debating on doing for this was Your Love by The Outfield.
Ooh, I do have that one.
You do have somebody on that?
Yes, I believe I have Liz Glazer scheduled for that.
Oh, okay.
Pretty nice stand-up, if I'm not mistaken. And they have a really good backstory for it, too. So I definitely want Liz for that song.
That is another song that will always slay at the Dueling Piano Bar. And I love it.
It's such a good song. I'm pretty sure I have heard from that, if not someone else. But I know that it has been claimed. But you're a great guest, and I do want to have you back sometime.
That'd be wonderful. Yeah.
We have a couple people that also want to be return guests, which is great. That means people like doing this. And I love doing it. So just a matter of time. But as for that, go have a great summer. Hopefully by the time this actually comes back, maybe we won't be in quarantine. That would be cool. Supposed to get my vaccine this week. So we'll see.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. Hopefully a couple days. This is like filler time. I'm twiddling my thumbs until my appointment. So we'll see. Hopefully. Stay tuned. Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.